Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. And now part two of my interview with Kyle Hamstra. Kyle was named the 2016 ASCD Emerging Leader, and he is a member of the Wake Science Core Leadership Team, along with being a member of North Carolina Digital Leaders Coaching Network. He enjoys presenting at conferences like ISTE, NCTIES, NSTA, and ASCD. In May 2020, he earned his master's in school administration from East Carolina University. Currently, he serves as a STEM specialist while aspiring to be an administrator and author. Follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Hamstra and visit his website, www.hamstrahighlights.com. And here is part two of my interview with Kyle Hamstra.
Have you experienced that a lot of teachers have been kind of responding to your tweets, following hashtag 180 in your area in North Carolina, using those standards that you post? Has it really taken off, or is it more something that maybe you and the closest followers in your PLN use? Because my experience in Colorado, there's not a heck of a lot of people that I know personally or I've worked with that are on Twitter. So kind of what's your experience with them using Twitter?
Oh yeah. So a few different layers. Again, how much time do you have? I love this conversation. This is good. Again, for me, it comes back to a few things. Number one, purpose. Uh-huh. So what is your purpose for joining a digital space? And by the way, whatever that is, that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's important to acknowledge it. I think it's interesting how different social media like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter seem to have their own unwritten rules of what people will and won't post. Like, I'll do all personal here and all business there, or I'll do school here and life here. And for me, it's all just one and the same.
Yeah.
And my purpose, again, for Twitter, I think was unique. And so I was aware of that purpose entering the space. And for me, it has value. I love it. I use this space of Twitter for a very specific reason. That's how I got started. However, I'm also aware that not everyone shares the same passion.
Mm-hmm.
And two, depending on your community, standards may not be the most important thing on your radar. It might not be a high priority, mm-hmm. but for my personal journey, the academic and content side was extremely emphasized. It mm-hmm. was very important. However, I understand and would really grow to understand and to continue learning that there are things in life that are more important than standards and hashtags and social media and Twitter and my opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There are the value is in each other. The value is in the people with whom we connect to become better and to continue learning, whether that connection be in a social media space like Twitter or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most valuable, meaningful, precious, priceless format or space in which to connect is face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like it. There's nothing more meaningful than the face-to-face connection. So I would say you have to want to. So this mm-hmm. is, you have to want to. This is something that you want to do. You know, if you don't want to, then it's hard to inspire someone else, because then they feel like they have to.
Yeah.
It's almost like the saying, like, you can't mandate a school culture. You have to be invitational. You have to, perhaps connect with the mind by going through the heart. You know, we're in the business of people, and it's about this relational connection that matters the most,
mm-hmm.
above all. And so I wouldn't go to a conference necessarily and stand up in a presentation and say, you have to be on Twitter and you have to do this standards-based hashtagging system and you have to do standards-based grading. Because a lot of times teachers may or may not have choices in those things. Yeah. You know, they're not worried about which standard might match a certain resource that may or may not have, or they might be sharing. They're not looking for standards-based learning opportunities in the world. They're trying to keep the building from burning down, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to maintain safety. They're trying to establish that relational connection, which, you know, supersedes and is foundational to everything that we do. So some have found value in this hashtag 180 process or in joining Twitter. Mm-hmm. I value that. I value those connections. I'm also aware that I can also value connections that are not in this space or based on things on which I am only passionate. Mm-hmm. So it's with perspective, I try to enter a conversation or answer a question like you just asked me. I think there's a lot to it. I think it's something you have to want to do. If you don't mm-hmm. want to do it, then it won't be meaningful.
Mm-hmm. You talked to me a little bit in the pre-chat about conferences and just the value of meeting people there, and you know, making those connections. And so kind of what are your thoughts, the in-person versus the virtual conference, if you've attended some virtual conferences, and what are you looking forward to when conferences start opening back up to in-person?
This is it. This is, I think, so telling of the time in which we're surviving and the time mm-hmm. through which we're persevering. I think this might capture it right here. It's, again, what I miss the most, I miss a warm hug. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I miss a firm handshake. I miss a fist bump. I miss all of the nonverbals that don't come through a screen.
Yeah.
I miss so much getting together with a small group of friends for a cup of coffee or breakfast or a bite to eat. I miss that so much. And so there's a very people side to this, and it's different right now. It's not a face-to-face conference. For me, the most meaningful parts of a conference are moments when it's the unexpected. So
yeah.
It's walking between sessions and seeing a friend in the hallway. It's happening to run into someone who happens to be an author and wants you to write a chapter in their book or something like that. It's seeing a friend you haven't seen in a year. And by the way, I'm getting an Uber to the airport. Would you like to share a ride? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's getting a bite to eat or dinner after an entire day and having that reflection time with fellow educators mm-hmm. to unpack what you've learned and really to connect. To me, so powerful. And one of my favorite formats is the poster. Mm-hmm. So a poster presentation, as you know, you can even do it like you did in the old science fair days, where you would have a trifold board, you bring an idea, you make it look artistic, you share your process, your journey, your thinking, and then people move on to the next one. Mm-hmm. Really, for me, those were multiple consecutive 5-minute face-to-face conversations. And then people walk on and they go look at the other 200 or 300 posters within an hour.
Yeah.
Maybe in that moment, just maybe, you shake hands, meet someone, and you exchange Twitter handles. So now that initial face-to-face meeting was a starting line. And how we're going to stay connected through Twitter, especially for me, extends this connection over a long period of time. I absolutely love the poster format. Had a few opportunities to do a poster at the last couple of ISTE conferences. This year, I also did a poster that was going to be face-to-face and then was postponed and still going to be face-to-face and then was virtual. Mm-hmm. And the medium changed the message.
Yeah.
Because it was virtual, the relational aspect of our learning together, of our connecting, was entirely different than it would have been face-to-face. Just like not even the same thing. For me, they were almost two different experiences. And I had prepared to share a 3 to 5 minute elevator speech to a group of people, and then they would move on because they're going to go see the other 200 or 300 posters. And what actually happened was some people stuck around and they stayed. And they stayed, some stayed for over half an hour. The poster was supposed to go, I think, maybe an hour. And I think it went an hour and 25 minutes or something like that. And they stayed. And so now it's almost like a presentation.
Yeah.
That was like a regular conference presentation, and it's no longer a poster.
Yeah.
And so the medium changed the message big time. And I think it was just a different kind of opportunity. I didn't expect it. And at the same time, I'm truly grateful for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've presented both a lot of in-person, those regular 45 minute to an hour sessions, and then the same thing in the virtual environment. And it's like, you know, you can liken it to teaching online, but you know, not everybody has their camera on. You don't necessarily see the people. You're not really interacting. You can ask for, you know, feedback in the chat, or you can tell people to unmute, but it's not obviously the same doing a virtual presentation, even if it is live. And then you sometimes have those recorded presentations. So you don't really get to interact because people watch the session on their own. So, you know, I definitely hope by the summer of 2021 that we start having in-person conferences, because I agree with you. I miss those personal connections, the chance to unwind, the chance to run into those people unexpectedly. And, you know, the last one I attended was, I think, February 21st. I did go to one in March, the 12th through the 14th, and they cut it short, but I was one of the few who stayed on and presented my session, because I just arrived and then they decided the next day to cut the conference short. So, but yeah, I really, you know, enjoy going to those as well. And another topic we discussed in the pre-chat was the movie, The Social Dilemma. And this was out on Netflix. You know, it was highlighted back in October, and, you know, I know a lot of people have seen it already. And for those listening, if you haven't already seen it, definitely check it out. And we were kind of getting into the conversation about, you know, being on Twitter and getting likes and retweets and all that. And you know, we see our students, you know, wanting those likes of their postings on YouTube or their Facebook postings. But, you know, that spills over to the adults as well, right? When we're wondering how many people are seeing our tweets, people like us that put out content for blogs and podcasts and things like that. So let's talk a little bit about your thoughts around that movie and around kind of how people are kind of getting manipulated by that like button.
Manipulation is exactly the right word.
Yeah.
I want to preface by saying, I still believe we can use all of our social media connecting technology, engineering powers for the good. Yeah. I still believe we can use social media for the good. And I believe that the space will be customized in the years to come. Anyway, I thought it was interesting near the end of The Social Dilemma, they interviewed the co-inventor of the Facebook like button. And I wish I could remember his name off the top of my head. He said, when we invented this button, we basically wanted to spread happiness and positive vibes and basically goodwill to all, right? That's what he said. And the unintended consequence couldn't have been more contrasting.
Yeah.
And there is, So many takeaways. A big one for me, though, was how any social media user's self-worth and identity can get wrapped up, influenced, shamed, shaped by social media features such as likes, hearts, retweets, shares, regrams. What am I leaving out here? You know what, though? They were really, really zooming in on kids.
Yeah.
They were really zooming in on these kids who were, you know, just didn't know what was going on and so just naive, but kind of along for the ride. And all the time I was watching, I was thinking, this is for adults.
Yeah.
this isn't for kids. This is way more for adults than, but you got to say there is a certain element, perhaps a dopamine boost when you get a like or someone else acknowledges and perhaps sympathizes with one of your posts or has had a similar experience or whatever it may be. There's a part of the human brain that I think craves that. The scary part is in your next post or the next week, when you don't get that same boost, you start to have a dopamine deficit.
Yeah.
I think The Social Dilemma did a great job of talking about the brain-based research and the effects on the human body.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see a part two or a sequel where they go more into, hey, here's what it is. What can it become?
Yeah.
What if you could customize your entire social media experience? What if I decide who can give me recommendations? Like YouTube videos just pop up all the time. What if I decide who can give those to me and what those might be about? Maybe perhaps you can. Are there ways we can control our notifications now? Are we as humans capable of not installing those apps on our phones? Because the entire phone's not bad. The entire device itself is not bad. I text with my family on that phone. I take pictures of our three-year-old on that phone. That's not bad. But the entire phone or device itself, I don't think should be demonized, but yet so closely associated with what the smartphone has become are all of those social media apps in which they, I thought the movie did a great job too of showing in which they're literally competing for your time.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see how much of you they can get and really how much of you they can steal away from the rest of your world, which might include your family, your friends, your career. It's not like teachers walk around tweeting all day. You know, it's not like they're glued to social media all day. Perhaps they might take a picture in the moment and reflect upon it later at night. But I think we have to be careful, aware. I think we have to be responsible. We have to demonstrate digital citizenship and good uses of social media, but I still believe in the power of using it for the good. What are your thoughts? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, I liked how it had the alter egos of that kid, right? And you know, it was like the bots that were competing for his attention, and you know, and then there was that scene that stood out when he got his phone taken away, right? And
and
you know, a lot of these, and we say it's only teenagers, you know, but there are a lot of adults that, like, can they live without their phone for a certain amount of time and or a certain, you know, app or something like that? And I think it really points out how much, you know, this has changed in the last 10 years. People have had Facebook since 2007, but you know, the fact that a lot of people care so much about, you know, for example, on Facebook, if they're just connected to whoever, you know, why should they care? You know, if they really don't have any personal connection with that person, you know, why should they care about how many likes they get, right? And it's I think, in my opinion, it's, well, Facebook, for me, I use Facebook and Twitter differently. The Twitter is used for the education realm, right? And It's, like we said in the pre-chat, I get a boost from getting, you know, retweets or likes from those really, edgy celebrities, right? So that kind of gets me a boost, right? When somebody that's really well known or has tens of thousands of Twitter followers shares my information, right? But I think it goes back to kind of, we grew up not having a lot of these things, and the fact that, we had the face-to-face connections and not, having something where we were sharing what we ate or sharing what we did this morning, right? And I don't think we're ever going to go back to a time where people aren't posting pictures of, their Christmas celebrations or their workout or whatever it is. But yeah. I think there, there needs to be a fine line as to what should kind of drive your mental health, right? And we talk a lot about kids, that are, the cyberbullying, I mean, that's a whole other topic, but a lot of these kids who are getting, depression and anxiety from just these connections that they have on social media, and they might not even be talking to these kids in person in their school building, right? And then that kind of spills over into the adults, people that earn money, right? That get sponsorships from Instagram because, they have so many followers, but what are they without that, right? And should these celebrities, in the Hollywood sense of celebrities, should they be earning, millions of dollars based on what they post on Instagram? I don't agree with that, right? Because I mean, I think what people are finding important these days is at least in the regular world, maybe outside of education, is a lot, is not the same as what people found important like 10 or 15 years ago, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah, and we can get sucked in it too as parents and as educators, looking at, and like you say, there are a lot of teachers they'll have their set aside time. They might take a picture during the school day and then tweet it out later. But, I've seen some educators that, they'll have their phone, they'll check their phone during the passing period or, when they go to the bathroom. I mean, the fact that people are using their phone in the bathroom blows my mind, right? But I mean,
I gotta say, I'm kind of convicted here, so I'm gonna watch myself. I'm feeling both convicted and tempted to check my phone right now as well. It's such an interesting point, but I think it speaks all the more to the need for kids to have safe spaces in which they can make mistakes, practice, try things. What better space than a classroom, perhaps, to practice these skills, because they're not going away. Not only are they not going away, they're intensifying.
Yeah.
They're exponentially expanding and speeding up. And I think that's so important. And for adults too. I would say that I definitely am feeling convicted in the moment. There is such a temptation to also add on all of those uses of the phone in addition to the good or the necessary or the appropriate or what's in the moment. I'll text my family and, I'm also going to do these two or three other things.
Yeah.
But, I didn't have time for that. So you really have to watch that. And I think it's so important for learners of all ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think when we're using Twitter, like in the medium that you've been using it in for your standards and to tweet out things that you've been doing in the classroom, I think that is a great use of social media in the sense that you're the adult guiding the students, right? Or if there is a school Twitter account where, sometimes there'll be student leaders who will use, the account or, post things from the school for a day. I think that, as students are guided, that can be a powerful tool. But, for students to be, we kind of view it as that, digital citizenship piece, and how, if students are getting sucked into just, whatever is happening on social media and interpreting what people are saying as, you know, a reflection upon themselves, then, you know, that's when it goes down that dark hole. So, but yeah, it's kind of that, I don't think there's too much of a gray area in social media. I think there's the black, you know, the negative aspects of it, but then there's also the white area of, you know, using it for something good. And there's a lot of students that also do good things, you know, when it comes to community involvement and raising money as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I didn't really get it until in one of my STEM specials classes, mm-hmm. I think it was fourth grade. I was so excited for students to practice feedback. They were going to learn how to give and receive feedback. And we had a very, mm-hmm. I guess you would say, simple format for which to do this. Mm-hmm. And it started by going into Flipgrid, one of my favorite platforms of all time, by the way. And it started by finding videos of classmates and watching their videos and then giving them feedback. And this was way before, this was a couple of years ago. And so it was before Flipgrid had enhanced their platform to have so many more features that makes this customized even more nowadays. And so this was in our STEM classroom. And I was walking around and monitoring and watching, and I didn't get the power of the social dilemma, so to speak, until I saw it for myself firsthand. I saw students, they didn't go to other classmates' videos. No. I saw five students in a row all together went to their own video first, mm-hmm. found it, and just they played it. And stopped it. Mm-hmm. Played it for 3 seconds and stopped it. Played it and stopped it. I think maybe they even tried to refresh. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, what are you doing? So I just literally went up to ask them. I said, what is going on here? Is everything all right? And they said, oh, yeah. And then I walked away a little bit and I overheard one of the students saying, oh, look, I have 20 more views than you do. My video has more views than you do.
Yeah.
I can't believe, first of all, that kids cared that much about that, number one. Number two, I couldn't believe that later, or perhaps beforehand, I should have known to disable the view count mm-hmm. feature in Flipgrid, if that had existed at the time. And number three, I couldn't believe the response from a fellow student, a peer, had said, yeah, you could have a lot more view counts, but it doesn't matter if your video is not that good. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you have a bad video. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a powerful reply, but I was still lost in the moment of how much kids care about their view counts. And then how much more? What else is after that? You know, for them going beyond 10 years old, eventually it's going to be perhaps many of the same things that adults wrestle with and are tempted with and get the dopamine boost from likes, retweets, shares.
Yeah.
All of those things. So that was a firsthand experience. And that was a few years ago. And it's a powerful moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And seeing kind of like you gave them that assignment to go into other students' videos, but they kind of just focused on their own, right? So, and I think that's something common that students will do, and they kind of get that peer, you know, everybody falls on that bad bandwagon once, you know, somebody says, like that student pointed out, oh, let's, you know, the more views you get, you know, it doesn't matter how good your video is. So, well, I think we've had just a really great conversation touching on a variety of topics that are very important in today's educational world. And as we move into the post-pandemic setting, out of everything we discussed today, what are some things you'd like listeners to remember? Oh.
That it's not about you. Mm-hmm. We're in the business of people.
Yeah.
It's about others. And that's it.
Great. Where can people find you online and connect with you?
I am on Twitter every day, speaking of.
It's been a couple hours since you've checked.
Tell you what, learning opportunities await. I am at Kyle Hamstra on Twitter. Mm-hmm. That's my name. I'm on there every day. And also I have a website, kylehamstra.com. And I've also recently come to know that educators also connect on Facebook and Instagram too. Mm-hmm. Up until a few years ago, I did not know that as much. And so I continue learning, but I really love connecting, especially if we can interact like you and I are and have conversations to help each other become better.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thanks so much for being my guest.
Dr. Dana Goodyear, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to our next conversation.